Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and to prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my guest is Yvonne Perry, who is owner of Writers in the Sky, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and then I will bring her on the air. After recovering from years of religious addiction and an abusive relationship with organized religion, Yvonne Perry is finally free to be recognized as one who operates in both worlds, that of spirit and of physical reality. A graduate of American Institute of Holistic Theology, Yvonne holds a Bachelor of Science degree in metaphysics. Her style of writing lovingly challenges people's belief systems in order to help them move past what she calls Sunday school mentality. She has written hundreds of articles on spirituality, death, afterlife, spirit communication, and suicide. She is host of We Are One in Spirit podcast, a talk show that offers people a chance to share spiritual insight and join cross-cultural hands. She's also a faculty member for Spirit Authors Network. Living life to the fullest in Nashville, Tennessee, Yvonne is an author, podcast host, blogger, an outstanding keynote speaker who enjoys helping people discover a spiritual path of love and joy that comes from the knowledge we are all one with our Creator. She presents her spiritual gifts of compassion to those who are ready to let go of fear and fully embrace unconditional love. And now I'd like to introduce Yvonne. Yvonne, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you, David, for having me on the show.
I'm very pleased to have you here, and it will be a little different experience being on the flip side of the interview, and I'm glad that you were gracious enough to grant me an interview.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you right at the offset, what is there a difference between spirituality and religion?
I think there's a huge difference between spirituality and religion. Like you said in your introduction, we are spirit beings having a human experience. Religion is something that is man-made. It's a system of beliefs, trends, dogma that a group of people are expected to abide by and not falter from, whereas being a spiritual being is that of being free from those encumbrances of having to do things a certain way in order to be accepted. Instead, we are here to bring our gifts, our love, our joy to one another and to the earth, and to share in that and to accept one another for who we are, how we are, no matter what type of lifestyle we choose. Rarely do you find that in a religious setting. It's usually somebody standing in the pulpit, telling everybody else what they should believe, what they should and should not do. A lot of shoulding going on there. And so that would be the difference, the main difference I see between religion and spirituality. One is led from the heart, and one is led from dogma.
I can relate to that, and I agree with what you're saying. I've had some issues with religious experience in my past. The one thing that I think is positive about religion is if it enhances a person's sense of spirituality, then I see that as a positive. And if it is restrictive or hinders somebody's spiritual growth, then I see it as a negative. And there are certain religions out there, and I don't want to identify them, but I have had experience and come across people who have been stuck in very narrow-minded religious traditions where there's a lot of judgment going on, and I don't see that as very life-enhancing or soul-enriching.
Mm-mm. In fact, it can be quite damaging to a person trying to develop gifts of the Spirit or trying to develop a more loving, compassionate way of dealing with people. When you're told that you're a sinner, that you're going to go to hell, that you're displeasing to God or that God's going to punish you, that can be very damaging to the soul, especially to a young child who is looking to God or mother, father figures as one who is nurturing, and they get this mixed message of what God is. You know, they really dive into that rewards and punishment system that rules our society so strongly, and I think many times it causes us to lose touch with who we truly are and what our dreams and hopes and aspirations are, and it restricts us from expressing our divine nature.
Which is unconditional love, right?
Absolutely.
Amongst other positive things.
Exactly.
Yeah. I loved what you said in your personal statement about bringing gifts of compassion to those who are ready to let go of fear and fully embrace unconditional love. To me, I see a lot of pathological, what I would call pathological religion, as being ego-based and based on judgment and sin and suffering, if you will. And unconditional love to me speaks of something that is of the Spirit. And I know in my own spiritual journey, I've had to come to identify what is ego and what is of the heart. And I just find that when I follow my heart, I'm connected to Spirit. And when I'm stuck in my head or stuck in a place of judgment, then I'm in a place of ego. Now, when did your religious journey begin, Yvonne?
David, it's Paula. Yvonne got dropped.
Hi. Well, that... that happened.
So hopefully I told her to call back in, so
right.
She should be. I'd like to continue with what I thought was interesting was her definition of spirituality. If you don't mind me coming in and to get it going until she calls back in.
No.
Because I've had the same thing between what is religion, and I think she put it very succinctly that religion is man-made, and spirituality is the heart, and here she is, so let's bring her back on. Yvonne?
Yeah, so sorry about that. The call failed, it said.
Well, welcome back, Yvonne. Yes. I had the experience yesterday of having a show that totally got mucked up, and we lost the producer, we lost a guest, lost myself, and had to begin again. But such is life, and so we'll carry on. Paula is my producer, were just commenting on how much we enjoyed your discussion on the difference between spirituality and religion. And I was making some comments, too, and I don't know if you heard any of them. And that doesn't matter, because I want to just pick up and ask you when your religious journey began.
My religious journey began when I was about 2 weeks old. I was taken to church by my parents when I was just a newborn baby. So I did not really ever have a chance to formulate my own belief systems. These were traditions and beliefs that were passed down to me. My parents, of course, I don't hold them any judgment about that. They were doing the best that they knew. They were, you know, doing what their parents had passed down to them, and it seemed to be working for them, and it worked for me for a while. But I really never had a chance to own my own truth until I was about 40 years old when I broke away from organized religion. So from a very early age, I found a place of community in the church. By the time I was 9 years old, I had started taking piano lessons and found that I had quite a talent for it. And by the time I was 15 years old, I was the church organist. And then I moved from there to being church pianist and playing for the choir and the congregation. And from there, I continued to play the piano for the various churches that I attended even after I was married. So religion and music was a very common daily experience. We didn't miss any services, David. We went Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. If there was prayer meeting or visitation, we went to that. If there was revival, I was there every night as a pianist. So it was something that was very deeply ingrained in me, and I found it rewarding because, like I said, you know, I found some acceptance there. People thought, oh, she's such a great pianist. And so, you know, you kind of don't want to leave that. And by the time you're an adult and you've been indoctrinated in that, you kind of start to own it, whether it really feels right or resonates to you. You start seeing that that's really your only option. When you've been told, you know, that if you leave the church, you're going to lose your salvation, or that you're, you know, you're going to die and go to hell, or there's just a lot of fear and manipulation around that. So it's, even if those people that want to get out of it, when they start feeling like, you know, this really isn't working for me, there's a fear about even leaving it. I was in a denomination that was called a Fundamental Baptist Church. And fundamental meant fun, you know, to have fun would mean that you are demented or whatever, because we were just, the way they spelled, it was joking, but from the pulpit I heard one time, how do you spell sin? S-U-N. I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? I mean, so that's the kind of teaching and messages that I got, that I wasn't even here to have fun. I was just here to try to stay in line so I could, you know, stay out of trouble with God. Not to mention that once I started questioning some of the things that I had been taught, you know, I started feeling that stirring within my spirit, like, something's not right here. Why can't we wear pants at church? Why can't we wear pants at all? I remember going swimming with culottes. I like to drown when those heavy things got wet. But because we weren't allowed to wear pants. And I began to question some of those things. Why can we not use pre-recorded music to use as a background for the soloist? And I was not accepted for thinking for myself, for questioning or coming against the authority, I think is how it was put to us, and ended up being rejected by the church, losing my place at one church as the pianist, and my husband got kicked out of the church. He was a deacon because played secular music. Yeah, I played secular music at a home show on this lovely grand piano in these fabulous homes, and we were hard up for money at the time, and I was being paid for playing these love songs, you know, wedding songs and what have you, just little popular tunes, at the home show in order to have money to buy groceries that week, and we ended up getting kicked out of the church for that. That's the kind of indoctrination that I've been through.
Wow, and you were playing outside of the church, as I understand it.
At a home show, yes.
And you were judged for that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting what you're saying about the fun aspect, because to me, spirituality is about fun, and it's about joy and love and all of these life and soul enriching qualities. The one thing that I did hear that sounded like fun for you during your years with the Baptists was your music. And I know, speaking for myself, since I play the piano and sing too, that is a way that I've learned to connect with my spirit and was one of the early ways that I learned to connect with my spirit. So I trust that was your experience as well?
I loved connecting with spirit through music. I would play the piano 4 or 5 hours a day, singing, writing songs, worshiping. That, to me, was my haven. That was my escape. If anything was wrong, I just completely went into that music. It was like my lifeblood. And still, today, even though my keyboard stays in the closet more than it stays out, and I don't even have a piano anymore, and we don't go to church, I can't say that music like that is a part of my everyday life, but I still love singing and vocalizing and intoning and chanting and using the voice and using music as a part of my life. So, you know, that part of it is still sweet. And I can even think, even last week, I've got a 97-year-old grandmother who was raised in church and still very religious. And the other day I just picked up the phone and said, I want to sing a song to you. And I sang one of those old hymns, O Come Angel Band, that I remembered singing as a child. The songs are still sweet, and the memories are still sweet. And, there's good things. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. There are good things involved in it, and sweet memories as well as the things that I had to find healing for after I left.
Well, what other significant events happened while you were in the Protestant religion?
Well, I left the Baptist Church seeking freedom. We left the Southern Baptist Church, or the Primitive Fundamentalist Baptist Church, and ended up in Southern Baptist Church. You know, you can only step out of the water one step at a time. There was even threat that going that far was too far. But from there, gradually, we ended up going to a Methodist church and trying different denominations to see what all, was out there, still staying within the tradition. We ended up at a Pentecostal church, and the gifts of the Spirit were allowed to flow a little more readily, more in small group than in the large congregational worship. But I began to experience some things there that felt more authentic to me. Gifts of prophecy, when you're raised in the church and you see things and you know things, and that gift is not allowed to operate, or you're judged because you speak of being able to see people or to communicate with people on the other side that have passed on, and that's not part of the accepted theology or doctrine of the church, you learn real quickly to be quiet about those kinds of things. So when I discovered the gifts of the Spirit and began to have those manifested in my life, it opened up something for me to be able to look inside myself and to see God as something besides someone who wanted to punish me, to be able then to feel the Spirit flowing that I had been holding back, and to be able to talk about some of the things I had been refraining from sharing. I found a different kind of acceptance, more of a self-acceptance as well as being accepted in a different type of group setting.
Can you describe what you mean by gifts of the Spirit at that point in time?
Well, the gifts of the Spirit are listed in 1 Corinthians 12, and it's talking about gifts of knowledge, like foreknowledge or precognizance, words of wisdom, where you have a piece of information to somebody that's going to help and enlighten, and maybe just like we do psychic readings or something like that, where you just have some confirmation or like a foretelling. Another one is the gift of speaking in a different language, an unlearned language. In fact, I'm writing a book right now on that. It's called Light Language, so that will be out pretty soon. And being able to interpret then what is said by those light languages. Some of the other gifts of the Spirit are the discerning of spirit, which has to do with being able to tell when there is a disembodied spirit around you, or being able to read the energy of another person who is in your presence, and maybe they are not being forthright with you, and you're able to see through that, so you're discerning that spirit. There's a whole list of them, and I began to pray then that I would receive all the 9 gifts that were listed there. And sure enough, over the course of time, I began to see them opening up and getting a little braver step by step and beginning to use those.
It's just been within the last 3 to 4 years that I really let loose the line and no longer fearing God, seeing God more as an energy-loving creator rather than someone who is an entity way out there somewhere, more as being in my body and every cell of my body, that it is the life force energy that flows through me. That totally changed my perception on it and allowed me then to begin to flow and to operate in the gifts of the Spirit more fluidly and in service. And in service to bless and benefit and help others through those gifts.
Well, I really love what you're talking about, that embodiment of God. That's something that I've come to embrace, is the truth of my being, that God is as much a part of me as he is all around me. And in essence, we're all children of God, and we all possess God within us. And from that place, all of those gifts of spirit that you speak of can flow when we tap into that. And so I thank you for that. Getting back to your right-wing fundamentalist days, would you say that that was a positive or negative influence in your life?
Oh, I see it as both. Right now, the book that I'm writing on light language is going to be filled with Bible scriptures that still have relevant meaning to me. You know, being filled with the Spirit. Don't quench the Spirit, but let it flow. So many things. It's talking about integrating the dark shadow side with the light side. And so we're looking at where sin did abound, grace did so much more abound. And we're talking about the integration. So I'm taking those Bible principles and applying them to my writing through a metaphysical understanding and looking behind just the words themselves and looking at the heart and the energy of what's being spoken and seeing that applied in a whole new way. But yet those who are coming out of religion, and many of us have some Sunday school teaching or some family member who influenced us or read Bible verses or told stories to us from the Bible. So we have that in common. It's like a common ground where if you say, for God so loved the world, well, everybody's going to say, well, that's John 3:16. So we have a bond through those scriptures and those practices that laid a foundation, and we continue to build on that and to build our new truth as it applies to us personally, rather than just being told this is the only interpretation that it has and it has to apply across the board. You know, life would be really boring if everybody was exactly the same, but yet we use our doctrine to try to herd people in like sheep into a corral to keep everybody from thinking different, you know, or having their own experience. We try to make everybody the same and to live by and abide by certain rules that just really quench the spirit, the spirit of the person as well as the Holy Spirit or whatever you call that life force in us that brings us such joy when we can move outside the fear. So there's good and bad. There's positive and negative things about being raised in a religion.
Well, I love the fact that you looked at the fact that there were good things, too, because I think that a lot of times that if we feel like we've come out of a situation where there was a lot of negativity, we may not, I have not, in my experience, always looked at the pluses, too. And in myself, I have a dark and light side, and I need to come to look at all of who I am in order to head towards the light. And light always overcomes darkness. So, and there's so much good stuff in religion, even if somebody is raised in something that is narrow-minded and judgmental, there's a lot of good stuff there, and I've always taken the attitude of take what you like and leave the rest behind. Mm-hmm. If it fills my spirit up, then I go with it. And if it speaks of fear and judgment, I let that go. Would you please explain what you mean by religious abuse and how did it manifest for you and how do you see it manifesting for others?
Well, I see religious abuse as something that is a control mechanism. For me, it was damaging to my family when you tell somebody that they can't play the piano, the gift that is natural to them, that is God-given, that spirit flows through, and you can only use it in this church with these songs at this time, and you can't use it anywhere else. That's kind of a brainwashing. That's damaging. And then when you tell a child that he's going to hell if he doesn't receive Jesus into his heart or do certain things or adhere, then there's this rejection factor. It damages your self-esteem. You begin to feel like, wow, I am this depraved sinner and deserving judgment. So our self-esteem is threatened by that. And I believe that our good, healthy self-esteem and self-love is a vital component to mental health. And when you strip that away from a person, you rob them of the opportunity of flourishing in their personality, in their gifts, and what they bring to the world and what they have to offer. To me, that's really, that's abuse. You know, if you did that to your child and you kept them in the room all day and, you know, you bad person, you can't come out of that room, well, that feeds all the fears and anxiety and the self-esteem, and that child begins to have all these bad images about himself. He lives in fear. It's the same when we're raised in an abusive church environment, when we're not allowed to be who we are.
That can be very subtle, too.
Yes, it can.
I wanted to ask you about that notion of receiving Jesus in your heart, and if you don't do that, you're going to go to hell. I've always been intrigued by the idea that some people will say that unless you find Jesus and accept Jesus as your Savior, you're going to go to hell. What are your feelings about that?
Well, I feel like Jesus is an archetype or an example or a teacher who demonstrated a totally different concept and different lifestyle than what the church has portrayed him as having or living. I see him as a very compassionate person who stood in his own power, who flowed in the gifts of the Spirit. He healed people. He raised the dead. He didn't judge anyone. Even the woman that was caught in adultery, he says, let whoever, whoever is not guilty of sin, you can pick up the first stone and throw it. So there was no judgment in him.
Right.
And I see that totally opposite in the teachings of most churches. So I think, you know, having Jesus in your heart means that you have that same likeness, that Christ consciousness or loving compassion and willingness to accept others without judgment, willingness to be of service and to help others. And also see that when Jesus left and he promised the Comforter or the Holy Spirit would come, that means that he would then be a spirit guide for us. That even though, you know, he might not be breaking bread at your table at 6 o'clock on Monday night, he would be with you always until the end of the age, or, you know, the start of the new age, which is right now. This is the end of that age, and we're starting a new zodiac position in the sky. So, you know, we still have that spirit. We have him as a spirit guide. We have others who are ascended or advanced souls who are spirit guides to us. You know, if you really think about it, having the Holy Spirit as your guide is a spirit guide. It can't be anything else but,
right.
You know, how else can you interpret it?
Right.
So, you know, if there's one guide, then there must be others. And, you know, I choose to believe that there are many who guide us on our paths, whether they are friends in body that help us on to discover our own truths, but there's also those who give us wisdom in our intellect, in our mind, in our emotions. We feel things in our bodies, coincidences, and they arrange things behind the scene. And oh, there's the money that comes in just in time. So many ways that those who are not in spirit, not in body, work with us in a spiritual realm. And that's not contrary to what Jesus taught. It is contrary to what the church will, quote-unquote, let you believe.
Mm. Well, that's beautiful. You shared some really beautiful things there. We're going to break now for a commercial, and then we will return to our interview with Yvonne Perry, who will be talking about her metaphysical belief system.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And I'll just say that he discovers that there is something that's worth more than that, and that is my latest book. And thank you for indulging me, Yvonne, with that little commercial. I'd like to ask you what your faith challenges were following your experience with the fundamentalist churches.
You mean when I'm coming out, what were my challenges with my
faith?
Okay. When I was coming out of the church,
yes.
I still had a lot of fear. I still had a lot of fear of God punishing me, of being judged. I had a fear of losing my identity because everything that I knew about myself had been wrapped up in who I was in the church and what position I held and what people thought of me. So moving out of that was scary. Plus, when I did finally leave, every time I left a congregation seeking something else, seeking something more that was more nourishing to my soul, I left behind a community, a place where I did find belonging and acceptance. That was probably one of the most difficult things, which is losing the friendships that I had made over the years and kind of like jerk the security blanket out from under you, especially when you didn't leave by your own choice but were asked to leave. There was a grieving process involved. Every time we would leave one church and go to another, even if you kept in touch with the friends, you know, and still maybe got together every now and then or made a phone call to one another, there was still not that community that of seeing them every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. So that was one of the difficult things, I think. The other thing was allowing myself to have permission to believe something other than what I was taught. Was it okay? Was I really right? What if I believed this? If I believe this and it doesn't work, do I have a plan B? I floundered for a while, not knowing what I believed. I knew I didn't adhere to everything that I had been taught, but I no longer had a truth that I could call mine. So I had this journey before me of exploring, which was a beautiful opportunity, even though scary, of exploring other religions and looking at different ways that people worship, different belief systems. And that's what brought me onto the metaphysical path. I saw something there that I hadn't seen before. I saw a freedom that was not wrapped up in judgment, not wrapped up in fear, that didn't have a certain standard of rules or doctrine or anything that I needed to adhere to in order to be accepted. And I began to study it a little deeper, and the next thing I know, I was enrolled in a college, American Institute of Holistic Theology. My husband and I both, we had left the church together, so we were both enrolled and were finding all kinds of things to talk about and discuss, and we were growing and learning new things, and it was really a fun time. But I still remember that disconnect I felt with, like, okay, I'm leaving this behind. I don't know what I'm going to, and I hope there's a bridge. You know, standing there in the middle of it thinking, I'm too far out of it to go back, and I'm not far enough forward to know where I'm going to end up.
Can you explain what you mean by a metaphysical belief system?
Yeah, the metaphysical belief system is giving you the idea of exploring for yourself what makes this true for me. How does this work? It's like instead of just going on over to the light socket and saying, oh, I'm going to flip this on, there's going to be light. Instead, you're going, I wonder how those wires carry electricity. And what would happen if I touch a screwdriver to that? And it's like you give yourself permission to just really take it apart and look at all the components of it to test it out. And even if it doesn't work out, you're still going to flip that switch on next time because there's safety in that. Knowing that you're not going to be punished, you're not going to be rejected, you get to explore, find your own truth. That was what was so appealing to me about the metaphysical path.
What caused you to change your beliefs so drastically?
I think it was like the last straw that broke the camel's back. You know, here I had been kicked out of one church for playing secular music. I'd been kind of disgruntled. I upset the leadership in another one when I asked, why can't we use pre-recorded music? And they're like, well, if you're going to do that and you're going to take that kind of stance, we're probably just not going to need you anymore. So that was some rejection. There were other ways where if you wanted to take a position in this church, then you've got to go through this class and this class and jump through this hoop and do this. I think I just got tireder and more frustrated until finally there was this church that my husband and I were going to that the pastor began tithing all the time. It's like every service. And here we are giving more than our 10%, and he's continuing to ask for it. Well, we found out that the pastor had signed another 10-year lease on the building that we were in, and the building, the cost had gone up on the rent of the building.
Oh.
And he was trying to get everybody to cover the new amount, and then when he was found out, of course, that everything hit the fan and the church split right down the middle. Nobody knew who was on whose side. We quit going. Other people quit going. And it was just a fiasco. My husband and I kind of looked at each other and go, are you kidding me? Is this all there is to life and spirituality? Surely there's something out there that's going to nourish our soul. And so we just took it at home. Mm. We would do Bible study together on Sunday morning. We would discuss things ourselves. We'd pray together. We'd sit at the keyboard and just have our own worship service. So that was like our little bridge while at least like, okay, I don't know where we're going. We can't go back to where we were. So here we are. This is what's going to work for today.
I love the idea of your own little worship service. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, how is your life different now as a spiritual person than it was as a religious person?
Oh, it's totally different. The joy, I think, is the deciding factor for me. Just the freedom and the joy that I have in being myself, in expressing the gifts that I have, in sharing those talents, in being able to connect with people who are like-minded, who are going through some similar experiences, and we're all having these awakening and aha moments and praying together or meditating together. You know, it's still a part of our lives. We sit in circle now, and I love this. Instead of everybody having the chairs all in a row and one person's going to speak and you're just going to hear that person, we sit in a circle and we pass a talking stick. And when it's your turn, you can say whatever you want and your ideas are shared and you can say what's on your heart, a shared experience that you've had. And then when it's your turn, you pass the stick and somebody else says the same thing. And so you really get to know the people and connect with them in an intimate way, in an emotional bond that's very nurturing and loving. We never had that in the church. Even in the Sunday school classes and small groups, there was still somebody else who was in charge of it all. There was somebody else who was still going to kind of like snap the chalk and say, here's the line that you need to align with. Here's the doctrine or teaching you need. And there was more freedom could speak what was really on your heart of what you believed, or any way that you could challenge and not be rejected. The circle provides
that. I love that.
That.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
How do you believe that religion can... Go ahead.
No, that's just one of the big differences. It's just the joy and freedom that I'm experiencing now. It's fun. It's fun to be a spiritual person.
I can hear it in your voice. You have so much zest and enthusiasm. That's wonderful. Mm. If that isn't spirit, I don't know what is.
Thank you. That is it.
Well, how do you believe religion can serve a person spiritually?
Well, how can it serve a person spiritually? I guess there are some religions out there that are less strict, that don't have as much doctrine. I know the Unity Church, the Church of Religious Science, some of the more free-thinking churches, I think, provide the community that people are seeking, the fellowship and the social engagement. So that, I think, is a very good purpose, more for a social engagement. And because the doctrines and the belief systems aren't so rigid, people do have more of an opportunity to share their personal beliefs and are not expected. And Unity churches are more embracing of alternate lifestyles. You know, you don't have to, you're not going to, I mean, in the Baptist church, you're not going to be a pastor if you're gay. Okay, just not going to happen. Not in the ones that I came from.
Right, right.
So there's more opportunity for people who embrace alternate lifestyles to have a voice or a position or a place to share their gifts in the church and be totally accepted. So I think choosing one that's right for you is the key to it. You know, there's still something very beautiful to me about going to Zen prayer in the Catholic Church and with a candlelight service and just singing those beautiful songs and the hymns. And there's something still very, very beautiful and touching and moving about that. So if you can be in a religion, in a traditional type church, and still own your truth and maintain your heart and your personality and your beliefs in that environment, go for it. Find the good in it.
I think the key word that you put in there was owning your own truth. I think that is so important. So thank you for pointing that out. I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about your beliefs in death and the afterlife and spirit communication.
Okay. Well, that, you know, from as far back as I can remember, I had imaginary friends and spirit guides and was able to sense energy and sense people who are not in body around me. And when we finally came out of the church and I felt like I had freedom to express what I was experiencing, I wrote a book about it. It's called More Than Meets the Eye, True Stories About Death, Dying, and Afterlife. And I have a blog that I maintain by that same heading, Death, Dying, Afterlife, blogspot.com. And I shared, I interviewed people and said, what is your experience with your deceased loved ones? And, oh, the beautiful stories that came to me where loved ones had left some type of a memento for them, something that they could identify with. Maybe they had a visitation and felt somebody in the room with them at night, felt a warm embrace, a hug, smelled cigarette smoke or found coins or feathers or something like that where their loved ones were giving them signs. So I compiled all of those together and brought in a piece on hospice care and on the role of the caregiver in terminal patients and wrote a book about that because my fear of the afterlife, my fear of death, pretty much went away when I had a near-death experience at age 17. And I was in a house fire. We caught the house on fire, my brother and I did. And I was burned pretty seriously, on my right hand especially. You know, I retained use of it, but third-degree penetrated all through the layers, burned on the backs of my legs, my face, my hair was singed, my left hand. So I actually went into a different state and I could see myself from two vantage points. I could see my surroundings around me when I was sitting in that puddle of grease. It was a grease fire. And I was sitting there with the flames going up the back of the chair and catching the coat on fire and the tablecloth is on fire. And I thought, I'm never going to get out of here alive. And at the same time, I was seeing the whole scene take place from a vantage point at the ceiling. And I was looking down on the scene. And I thought, wow, I don't know what this is about, but there's something that the church hasn't told me going on.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, I wrote the book with, you know, these are just some amazing stories. If it resonates with you, here's the book. From there, my spiritual path led me to start writing a book about being empathic. While I was in the church, I was also on the prayer team. I was an intercessor, prayed at all of the prayer room gatherings and conferences and things like that. I had an inner city ministry at one time and went around to different churches and led worship and prayer groups. So those were some things that I was picking up the energy of other people. Somebody else would get healed, and then I found myself sick with whatever I just released in them. Didn't understand the gift of empathy. So once I had finally nailed that down as, oh, my goodness, I'm picking up energy. This is energy, and I'm taking this into my body, into my emotional field, my mental field, and how do I clear this? How do I deal with this? And Spirit showed me some things about that and gave some exercises that I could begin to do to strengthen my own boundaries, my spiritual art boundaries around my body. So I wrote, Whose Stuff Is This? Finding Freedom from the Energy, Thoughts, and Feelings of Those Around You. And from there, the book,
now,
the writing just progressed more and more. Go ahead.
What is the name of that second book, Yvonne?
Whose Stuff Is This? Whose Stuff, like junk. Whose Stuff Is This?
Oh,
Finding
okay.
Freedom. Yeah.
Now,
whosestuffisthis.com.
Where can people find your books?
Oh, they're all on Amazon. If you'll just type in my name, Yvonne Perry, or you can find them on my website,
mm-hmm.
weareoneinspirit.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for that. Now, I wanted to ask you about the spiritual meaning of suicide. What would you have to say about that?
About people who commit suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My take on that is that when a person takes their own life, it's like starting over again. If you reject the opportunity that you have here to develop your soul, to come into the earth plane, to learn lessons, to clear karma or whatever it is that we come here for, if we abort that opportunity, then we're probably going to go into some type of an area where we're being held in a teaching or training classroom-type setting. And the very next opportunity that we have to reincarnate, we're probably going to come back into a situation very similar to the one that we got out of. So there's really no benefit in taking your own life. There's no punishment. You know, God's not going to say, okay, you're going to hell because you took your own life. It's more like, oops, we really needed those lessons, so let's create an opportunity to get you back in the classroom, to get you back in a body. Well, let's reincarnate, and let's see if we can help you. And I think there's some instructions, you know, that talks about there being a judgment after after death, but I think all that is really a life review in which you get to see ways that opportunities came to you and ways that maybe you could have taken better advantage of those opportunities. I don't think there's any grief or punishment over it. It's just a holding pattern until you're ready to give it another try. It's like repeating fifth grade or something.
Mm.
You know, you fail it first time, give it again, and try it again next year.
Right. How did you come to believe in reincarnation?
That was a fun thing. I was with this group of girlfriends that I was coming out of religion. I was suffering from the abuse, and I ended up going to a weekend workshop where there were counselors and what have you available. And I met these girlfriends there that kind of embraced a more freedom freer lifestyle, more freedom. Even though they were raised in the church, they were also coming out of their religion. So we found a lot in common, and one of them says, "What do you think about reincarnation?" I'm like, never thought about it. I don't think I have any thoughts on that. I don't think I have any beliefs on it. So that sparked in me some curiosity, and, you know, I was in that place where I didn't know what I believed anymore. I didn't really have any reason to believe one way or the other, so I said, I'll get some information on it. There was a book out there, Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Let me think of the title of that. It had something to do with Christianity and reincarnation in the title. And since I was coming out of Christianity and I wanted to know about reincarnation, those kind of, like, spoke to me. But Clare Prophet was the author of that book. And after reading that book, I'm like, that makes sense. And from there, the more I embraced that idea, the more I thought about it and turned it over in my mind, it's like, yeah, that works for me. That totally resonates. To now it's like, how could it be any other way?
right. No, I came to embrace the idea that we reincarnate many, many years ago, and it came to me after what seemed like it would be a death experience for me, where I had an out-of-body experience. And after, I was in this communication with spirit the whole time. It was an amazing experience. And I don't remember what transpired during that time. It was just this wonderful feeling. And after that experience, I believed in reincarnation. And I've since learned that Jesus actually taught reincarnation, and that was struck from his teachings during the Council of Nicaea. So that might be something that people would like to do some research on. Think that Christianity does not embrace reincarnation, because that's not true.
Well, there are hints of it throughout the Bible. Well, it's about where Jesus told Nicodemus, unless you be born again, you will not see the kingdom of God. In other words, you've got to keep doing this rebirth thing until you finally get enough awareness and enough of understanding that you begin to drop all of the things that are blocking the light. I think we all have the light in us. But drop all the facade that blocks the light and allow that light to shine through you. Then you see the kingdom of God. But that usually comes through the birth and death reincarnation cycle. So it's not completely hidden. Mm-hmm. If you look a little deeper, it's not really hidden in the Bible. They just don't use
the terminology. I think I found the book that you were... Right. I'm wondering if this might be the book that you were referring to by Elizabeth Clare Prophet. I just went on to Amazon. There's a book called Karma and Reincarnation, Transcending Your Past, Transforming Your Future. Could that be it, possibly?
That's not exactly the one, because the one that I remember had something to do with Christianity and reincarnation in the title.
Okay. Well, she's written so many books, and
she's written a lot of books.
Amazon.com. She's written dozens and dozens of books.
Yeah.
What are your writing plans for the future, Yvonne?
Well, I'm involved in a book right now that involves light language, which is one of the gifts of the spirit, and I'm taking that from a more galactic and cosmic understanding of light language, or speaking in tongues, being the language of the Creator, language of angels, and how we can tap into that to make shifts in our DNA and open up and activate toward the ascension. You've probably heard a lot about the ascension period that we're in, and we see a lot of shifts, even shifts like the one that I went through, where I was coming out of religion and really starting to own my own beliefs. Those are shifts that are indicative of a shift in consciousness. Across the board, you see people coming out of it and starting to question things and find their own truth. And that's part of it, really just getting honest with yourself and coming into your own understanding of Scripture, understanding of Spirit, and finding what resonates with you personally. It doesn't have to be what everybody else says. So I'm going to offer, a very unique perspective on that.
I love that message that you're putting out there. Thank you for that. What messages would you put out to people who have no faith or who are struggling to find their way back to faith?
go within. It's all inside you, everything you need. It's not in a book. It's not in a doctrine. It's not in a church. It's inside you. Go there. Find the stillness and ask yourself, what is truth? Truth for you may not be the same as truth for me, and vice versa. Find what resonates with you and see if you can formulate your own comforting belief system that works for you, that guides you, that helps you through the hard times, that has meaning for you.
I have a friend who's an atheist who's got stage 4 cancer and is dying. And I wondered what you would say to a person who's facing death who's a non-believer.
I probably wouldn't preach doctrine to them. I would offer them a hug.
Right.
I would offer them
right.
energy. I would offer them compassion and just allow them to have whatever belief they want. It doesn't have to be my belief. I wouldn't
I like
try to change
that.
A thing about them. I wouldn't try to change a thing about them.
I like that. That's beautiful. Thank you. Now, how can people find your podcast?
Well, the podcast has taken a turn. In fact, when you were reading that bio, I'm like, whoa, that is outdated. I need to do something there. The podcast has become a group coaching session. I started doing some one-on-one coaching and found that that people were just really hungry for the more information on the topics in my book, especially the empath piece. And so I have transitioned the talk show in which I was interviewing other people about their beliefs and about their books and what have you into a kind of a Q&A forum, kind of like doing the circle, passing the talking stick on the call so that people get to share their experiences with being an energy-sensitive person or, how are you dealing with the changes and the shift in consciousness that we're feeling. They're having some bizarre experience, some spiritual experience, and they don't know how to deal with it. And so there's just some comfort and some answers that I'm able to give through my own experience there. I enjoy doing that with co-hosts that also has similar background and similar experience as me. So the podcast is kind of like not a talk show anymore. It's more of a group coaching, group counseling kind of thing. And that's on the website, weareoneinspirit.com.
Okay, so if people go to the website, they can view different podcasts or listen to different podcasts?
Yeah, there's one on there. I believe it says podcast. So you'll be able to click that, and everything that's archived on iTunes would pop up.
Oh, great, great. Well, I'll have to check that out myself. Well, I thank you very much for coming on the show today, and I could have spent another hour talking to you because there were so many things that you said that I would have liked to have picked up on and talked about some more. So maybe we can have you back again sometime if you'd be willing.
That would be great, David. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you, Yvonne. And so once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.